Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Nats Hot Stove Show here on Sports Radio 106.7 The Fan. Good Saturday morning to you. Pete Medhurst with you. It is great to have you with us here as we continue to talk about the sport of baseball. And, of course, it takes on huge meaning here in the nation's capital as the Nats will be defending their world championship, seeking another one. It'll be a clear, sunny day out there for you today. It's going to be a little chilly out there, but great to have you with us here on this Saturday morning. And, you know, certainly in terms of negotiations, things have been a little bit chilly outside of the Yan Gomes re-signing for Washington, which has occurred since you and I had a chance to last speak. We were in Houston last week with the Navy football team as they were victorious against the Cougars. And, you know, obviously having Gomes and Suzuki back as a team again, that certainly appears to be something that worked out last year. And I will be shocked if Yan Gomes plays the exact same way again next year. I mean, the body of work was just too good before that, which makes the deal now at 2 years and at $10 million even that much more of a bargain, in my mind, for the Nationals catcher here with he and Kurt Suzuki going forward here with the Nationals. Plus, you keep the chemistry with pitching staff, and that's ultra, ultra important as it pertains to that. The big news, of course, Howie Kendrick back in the fold, 1 year, $6.25 million with a mutual option for 2021. Gives you leadership in the dugout, certainly with Parra exiting to Japan and with Howie staying here, still remains a veteran presence. He and Ryan Zimmerman, you know, guys that provide that veteran presence in that locker room that you're still going to need because you've got so much youth in there going forward with guys like Soto and guys like Robles. Trey Turner still a relatively young player in terms of Major League Baseball experience. So I think it's a solid move to bring back. Now the question is, you know, what is the role going forward? Obviously, Zim is not back in the fold officially as of yet, but Ryan, as you'll hear with Grant and Danny coming up, and obviously, you know, Monday night, he made his presence known saying, hey, if it's not here, it's not going to be anywhere. It's just going to be me out on the golf course. And, you know, you look going forward, obviously Howie's a guy that can give you first, can give you some second, can give you third as well. So at least you've got a solid short-term starter if you have injury that can go in, can play some third, can play some second, and can play some first. And how you divvy up the bats between he and Ryan Zimmerman over at first base if you need them because they're both right-handed. Perhaps it becomes an analytical game at that point where you're going to have to obviously watch the number of at-bats, the number of games that both guys play. So if a guy's got a particularly good matchup, maybe that's the guy you go with that particular day for Davey Martinez. But I just believe with the exiting of Parra, you still maintain veteran presence in there. You still officially don't have Ryan Zimmerman back in the fold. So Howie Kendrick makes all the sense in the world right now for the Nationals. But, of course, going forward, everybody wants to talk about Mark Lerner's comments about how they certainly allegedly cannot afford Anthony Rendon and Steven Strasburg, guys that on the rumor mill are going to still cash in and get some significant dollars. Now, you know, look, I mean, until someone, you know, we can't say it on the radio, but you know the saying, you know, either go number two or get off the pot. And, you know, until somebody puts some crazy money out there, perhaps this is a preemptive strike by Mark Lerner to say, hey, maybe we're backing off in this thing. So teams don't necessarily bid as high as they think they have to if the Nats aren't in it. And then Boris comes to them and say, hey, this is the best offer we have out there. And the Nats say, okay, we'll do that. And then all of a sudden they both end up here. It could be a shrewd negotiating tactic. And look, people who have a lot of money have a lot of money for a reason. They have a lot of money for a reason because they're good at negotiating. They're good at, for lack of a better word, swindling others in negotiation. And, you know, look, I mean, you make money because you're not spending money on expenses. That makes your profit margin greater. The Lerners seemingly are specialists in that. A lot of people kicked them to the curb last year because they didn't re-sign Bryce Harper. What happened? They won a world championship. Because you know many of you were saying the same thing. A lot of us in the media said the same thing at this time last year. Oh my gosh, no Bryce Harper, they can't go forward. That proved to be foolish thinking on our part as we saw what happened. The Nationals put 25 guys out there, albeit used a ton of other guys from the ones they started with opening day. They managed to get themselves to the World Series. You just have no idea. You can have, look, how many great rosters from a free agent standpoint did the Yankees construct in the 70s and 80s that didn't win? There were a lot. There were a lot. So just because you spend the money, look at the Boston Red Sox. Won a world championship last year. Boom. This thing went in the dumper. Mookie Betts didn't have the same season. Chris Sale and David Price got hurt. Two guys that they had major investment in. So from that standpoint, you just don't know. You don't know how it's going to unfold over 162 games. And perhaps that's what last season taught us about the Nationals, about sports. Because as much as we want our team to win, and you know as a fan, you're not spending your money to sign the player. Do you contribute by buying tickets and concession, merchandise? Absolutely. You do contribute in that way. But ownership that has the kind of dollars in their pocket that the learners do, they end up with that kind of money because of the way they conduct fiscal business and how responsible that business is. That's why you have the investment in the starting pitching that you do with Scherzer and with Patrick Corbin. And you did with Steven Strasburg before he had the clause to opt out. That's good business by his agent to put that clause in there because Steven Strasburg kept pitching well, pitched his best season ever last year. And because of that, he's got the right to examine free agency. But again, we're not seeing anybody put any money on the table. They're doing interviews. They're doing their due diligence. West Coast teams, hey, Steve, you want to come back out here where you played at San Diego State? You have to ask him that question if you're a general manager of another team and he's a free agent. You'd be a fool not to. You know, hey, what's it going to take to get you back out here? We know you moved your family east. We know you like Washington. We know you've obviously been a world championship with them. But what would it take for us to get you out here? Those questions are being bandied about right now with Steven Strasburg's agent, Scott Boras, and clubs around Major League Baseball. But normally, when one side or the other wants to leak a figure, wants to say, hey, we've offered so-and-so a huge amount of money. We are aggressively telling their fan base, we are aggressively pursuing this player. Outside of the Yankees and what they've said about Cole, and to a lesser extent, Strasburg, they're the only ones that have said, hey, we are aggressively in on this with this player. We've not seen anyone outside of, you know, mentioning, hey, this team could be in on Rendon. Everybody would want Anthony Rendon. You'd be a fool not to want Anthony Rendon on your baseball team. But that doesn't necessarily equate to, you know, how many dollars it's going to take. You know, we continue to look at the Nolan Arenado contract. That's a great baseline to start. Each year, contracts go up. They escalate. They don't de-escalate for players like Anthony Rendon. I don't think Anthony Rendon is going to be unemployed still in February. I don't think Steven Strasburg is going to be unemployed in February. I think it's going to happen for both players sooner rather than later because the players and their personality don't necessarily match that of what we saw with Bryce Harper, who was obviously trying to gain, you know, one of the biggest contracts in the history of the game. And he did. He got it. We can all sit here and debate whether he wants to be in Philadelphia or not, but that's where he's at. It's where he's playing. It's where he's saying all the great things right now about being a Philly. They went out and signed Zach Wheeler. We'll talk about that in the back half of the show. They made a commitment of $118 million to a guy that could very well get hurt tomorrow, has not had a long history of pitching extended innings in the course of his major league career. 5 years and $118 million. It's a long commitment to a guy like Zach Wheeler. Could he pitch well? Absolutely. Does it guarantee you're going to have him for that long a time? I don't think so. Braves signing bullpen pieces, obviously now publicly saying they're re-examining Josh Donaldson. As you look inside the division, you know, this is what the Nationals will have to compete with. I think this division is going to be hell coming up next year. I really do. Each team realizing, hey, how do we beat the team that beat us? We've got to go reinvest in pitching. Braves bolstering the bullpen. That was their weakness last year. Phillies bolstering starting rotation. That was their weakness last year as well as their bullpen. So any pitcher worth his weight in salt, Philadelphia is going to consider here in the offseason. They must improve their pitching staff. They've got a lineup that can hit. You've got to be able to support it with terrific pitching. Whether they are able to get enough of it, we'll see. I thought the Braves overpaid for Cole Hamels, $18 million. When I watched that guy pitch at Wrigley against the Nationals, that dude was laboring at the end of last year to get the five and get to six innings. You want to go $18 million for that? Maybe because you're paying for veteran presence in your clubhouse, in, you know, amongst your pitchers at spring training. Cole Hamels is a hell of a competitor. I will give you that. His results speak for themselves over the life of the career. $18 million at this point for him? I'm not so sure that was the ticket. But again, as we say in the trade, nobody's met a one-year deal they didn't like. If you have to eat part of it, you're only eating it for 1 year. It's not like you went two or three for 36 or 48 or something of that level. So from that standpoint, we'll see. But to get to the Nationals, those teams have to improve their pitching. They're taking steps in that direction, which is why if you have to choose between one of the two, the way the Nationals have built their team, there's no doubt Strasburg and that rotation is given higher priority, at least in terms of the way the team is built. Because if you keep the other team from scoring, you can afford to score less. Whether that's the case going forward, we'll see. But expect things to heat up here, I think, in the short term for both players, whether they stay or whether they go. Coming up, we'll review this week. Grant and Danny at the red carpet on Monday night, talking to Mike Rizzo and Ryan Zimmerman, their conversation with Barry Svrluga about the Nats offseason. Then in the back half of the show, we'll talk about what's happening around the league, the moves that are being made, and what teams are doing to try and bolster their clubs. It's the Nats Hot Stove Show. It's a Saturday morning, and it's right here on your home for Nationals baseball. Sports Radio 106.7 The Fan. Welcome back to the Hot Stove Show. Of course, the Nationals getting Howie Kendrick back in the fold, a year at $6.25 million with a mutual option for 2021. Certainly the highlight of this offseason so far for the Nationals. And earlier this week, the unveiling of the video detailing the World Series and, of course, a championship for the Nationals. Grant and Danny broadcasting from that red carpet. And, of course, they spoke to the general manager and president of the Washington Nationals. Mike Rizzo got his thoughts on being out on the red carpet and obviously what lies ahead right now as winter meetings are going on and baseball decisions are being made around Major League Baseball, two huge ones coming up here in D.C.
Yeah, it's awesome. You know, great venue here at the Anthem, and what a great response from the D.C. area. And, you know, the fan base couldn't have been better. They handled this thing, and they treated this thing with poise and class and dignity, and really showed us that, how to win a championship for the fans.
How different is it going back to work? Because the business of baseball doesn't stop. Congrats, you won. Now you got to sign somebody. You got to notify somebody, DFAs, whatever. All the different business of baseball. How hard was that going back to work?
Well, you know, we jumped right into it. The calendar that baseball is. 2 days after the World Series was finished, we had business to do. So we dove into it. You know, we were preparing for it as the World Series was going on. So we had our off-season strategy in place because you do get such a late start. Unfortunately, when you win the World Series and play that deep into it, and we're uh, you know we we prepared for it, and but yeah, the business never stops, and you know, we're now deep into, you know, preparing for 2020, and you know, we have decisions to make, but you know, you always can you know, think back and look back on you know, what a magical season it was, and you know, try and take some type of lessons with you into 2020, and try and you know, kind of negate some of the bad things that happened that put you in such a hole that we had to play the way we played to win the whole thing.
You've had a month now to kind of look back and reminisce, and that's what tonight's all about, obviously, is we'll be watching this documentary that's over an hour long on the journey. What are some of the things, when you look back, that stand out to you? It doesn't have to be moments necessarily, but either people or contributions that you say, man, that was really something.
Well, you know, one of the things that I think we're kind of lost in the success of the season is, you know, there was about a 5 weeks period there when Joe Ross and Eric Fetty really stepped up in that rotation. If you remember, we had starters down, and we were not going great at the time, and you know, we had two of our big five were out, and we were struggling, and we need a good solid innings from some young people to get us through that period. And they not only pitched well to get us through the period, they pitched outstanding, and they won a lot of baseball games for us. And I think that was a big part of our success this year. You know, just you know, it, when they say it takes a village, it really does. You know, we went 40 plus deep this year. You know, our bullpen, there was only one guy that remained from the opening day bullpen for the final day bullpen. So, you know, we went through a bunch of players. It shows what you have to do to win these things. Your scouts better scout well. Your development better develop well. You better have a deep roster, not only on your 40-man, but well beyond that. And you better not be afraid to go reach to those guys. And you have to have the confidence that your scouts and your player development guys have trained these guys and prepared them to play the National way when they get to the big leagues, because they're hitting the ground running and, you know, in a pennant race that could be described as, you know, win or go home way back in August and September.
Mike Rizzo with us here, Grant and Danny live, red carpet at the Nationals World Series documentary premiere event. It's just so cool to say that. You could have a great process. Everything could go right, but that ball to Jock Peterson, it could be fair. Or, you know, a base hit goes through, or, you know, a line drive gets caught and you guys could have come in second or something like that. Give me a moment where you know your process was good, right, and everything, but you went, man, that was unlikely. That's crazy that just happened, because there's so many moments as a fan that it's so unbelievable this run you guys went on.
Yeah, well, you know, you got to look back to, you know, when you're talking, you know, quality at bats and times where, you know, that are unexpected or really, you know, that never happen. It's, you know, left on left, Hader against Soto. You know, how many times does Hader give up, you know, that kind of exit velocity? You know, no matter where the ball went, if it was caught or if it wasn't caught, you know, he had a great at bat against one of the toughest left-handers. You know, Soto again against Clayton Kershaw, you know, down by a run, L.A., game five, elimination, what, four or five outs away from going home, and this guy takes one of the greatest left-handed pitchers in the history of baseball deep to tie the game up. And then Howie does his thing, and we have great at-bat after great at-bat. So, you know, as you think about, you know, we always think about late in the season. You know, to me, that Suzuki home run against the Mets when we came back down 6-9 was as big a game as there was in the regular season. There were so many of those moments where you know, Davey and I met after the game. We said to ourselves, you know, we can build on this momentum, and you know, we saw what could have been in those classic moments.
What's it like for you now, as you off season is underway, market is established, and players are talking to other teams? You don't know what's going to happen with Rendon or with Strasburg. You can't just jump out there and make your best offer. How does this work now for you?
Well, it's, you know, our process is our process. You know, we've done it well for, you know, this is my 12th season as the GM. So, you know, we know what we're doing. The industry knows what, you know, our MO, you know, the agents know our approach, and we're going to build a quality team that gives us an opportunity to go deep in the playoffs and play meaningful games in September and October. That's our creed. That's our motto. That's, you know, that's the way we construct these rosters, and you know, we have such a great a bunch of guys, front office, scouts, player development guys, that add all this information that allows me to make these kind of decisions that have allowed us to play such great baseball the last eight seasons, and now, you know, hoist a World Series trophy.
Last one for me. One of the questions we get all the time on the show, I'll pose to you. Did the World Series run make it more likely or easier for you guys to try to bring Rendon or Strasburg back?
I think we had our plan before, during, and after the run. We have a master plan. These things aren't done in a vacuum. We don't make these decisions in a week or a day or a month. These things are discussed throughout the season. And I think it's as likely because of the winning a World Series, that we would try and bring back both of them. But we're going to have to. Asset allocation, and we have to make the right decisions, and we have to do our business the right way. But always in mind that this fan base deserves a winner, and we're going to do our best to provide them a winner.
Mike, my last one. Who are you happiest for? Obviously, you can exclude yourself because you guys got to hoist the trophy, but in the organization, who are you happiest for?
Well, I think, it goes to my 2 9-year-olds. Ted Lerner, who's the patriarch of this organization, and my dad, who's our special assistant to the GM. So, they've been grinding this thing away for a long time. I feel best for those two, and I really feel great for the D.C. fans because, they deserve this. They earned this. They needed this, I think. You could tell by their response that they're all into this thing.
Thanks for the time. Thanks for all of the many interviews throughout October. You probably saw more of us than you would have liked, but we enjoyed the run. Thank you.
Appreciate it, guys. My pleasure.
Thanks, Mike.
Mike Rizzo, the president of baseball operations for the Nationals. We're joined now by Ryan Zimmerman on the red carpet. He's done a lot of things for the first time recently. I think walking the red carpet before a World Series documentary premiere, this might qualify.
I'm a huge red carpet guy. That's kind of my thing.
That's right.
If you can't tell.
Who are you wearing tonight?
Yeah, I don't know. This is really cool, man. They were just asking, I really haven't watched any of the games. I mean, when you get done with it, you have the week of craziness and celebration where you're going around and doing a bunch of stuff. But you don't really watch any of the stuff. You just answer questions about it. And then after that, you kind of want no part of it, honestly. For a couple weeks, you actually unpack and live in your house and see your kids. And now we're to the point where you kind of start to think about it a little bit. And this will be the first time I've really looked back at it. So it'll be cool to see kind of the content that they have and the replays from the games. And I'm looking forward to it.
Well, you get to see it through our eyes. I know what it looks like when you hit a homer off Baez. I know what it looks like when you took Garrett Cole yard, Minute Maid Park. What moment, it could be one of yours or anybody else's, do you want to see from a fan's perspective?
Man, that's a good question.
That's why we pay him a lot of money.
Yeah, you need a raise. I don't know, man. The wild card game is not started it at all, but to see that kind of there's so many sixth and seventh things where we came back and... That's why it's so cool. There's not really one moment. I mean, it seems like in every series there was 4, 5, 6, 7 moments where it looked like we were done, and then all of a sudden someone gets a big hit or we catch a break or something like that happens. So I guess that's the answer to the question. It's really hard to zero in on one moment, which is kind of what makes this so special.
Barry Sverluga of the Washington Post joins us. Let's start with Rendon. Buster Olney has talked to folks. He says Rendon's likely going to be the first of the stars to get a deal in place. What have you heard? What do you know about Rendon's sweepstakes right now?
Well, I think it's interesting that Buster's reporting that about the timing, because typically Scott Boras's clients wait and wait and wait. We can go to Bryce Harper last year, signing well after spring training started, as a pretty prominent example. I think what that tells you is something we've kind of known about this all along. Anthony Rendon is driving this train, and Scott Boras works for Anthony Rendon, and he's made that very, very clear. I would say a couple things. We've probably touched on some of these before. The Nats offer in September to Rendon, their most recent offer that I know of, 7 years, between $210 and $215 million in that range, included deferrals. We've talked to death about deferrals and the Lerners and the Nats baking them into almost all or all of their long-term contract offers. This was not a Bryce Harper situation where the deferrals went out to pay the player when he's in his 50s and 60s. This was the essentially the terms of the Max Scherzer deal, where it's a seven-year contract and then you're paid 7 years beyond that. So much more reasonable in structure. Anthony Rendon, however, is not into deferrals basically at all. He is of the mind, I've been told, that it's his money, he's earning it. Why should the team be allowed to invest that money when he could take it and invest it in real time himself? So that may be a biggest sticking point, not the money, not the years, but really the structure of the contract between the Nats and Rendon. That is not at all saying that they can't circle back. It doesn't mean that if he meets with another team, the Nats are out of it. It just means that the last offer didn't make him jump right at the moment.
So, and Barry, that's what I wanted to follow up on. I remember last year we kind of did this with a major superstar leaving town. They made their offer, and there didn't seem to be much negotiation there. It was like, this is our offer. And I guess Harper and Boris kind of went, wait, really? Anything else? And then the answer was no. Do you think they might revisit? Might they up their offer, kind of recognizing this is a unique case here, given, you know, you're going to lose a second consecutive position player superstar that just helped deliver something major to this city?
I don't think it's over by any means, Danny. I would just revisit on the Harper thing. They did have a meeting the week before Christmas in Palm Springs with the Learners, and the Nationals came back with an offer at that time that was actually less than their first offer, which I think is an indication that they ultimately didn't really want the player back. I think that the Rendon thing could be more of a conversation. From the national standpoint, he's a huge piece of what they do and what they did. It would be a homegrown player, position player, extended his time here. They haven't had that since Ryan Zimmerman signed two extensions. And it's hard to imagine the lineup being anywhere near as potent without his bat in the middle of it. I think, in a way, Anthony Rendon is more important to the Nats, certainly for the next 3 years, than the Nats are important to Anthony Rendon. Not that he's a mercenary, but I don't think his heartstrings are completely tugged back to D.C.
Barry, I planned on eviscerating them every day after he signed somewhere else for a while, and now that they've won a World Series, newsflash, I'm not going to do that. So they're going to get bailed out by that a little bit, but kind of correct whatever you want to here. I was perfectly fine letting Bryce walk. In fact, I wanted to do that based on the money. If not now, when? When do you break the bank? When do you break glass? You're not the Oakland A's. I know the Nats say they're not the Dodgers or the Yankees, and the TV deal's a problem, and the attendance is a problem. You just made hundreds of millions of dollars this postseason. You won a World Series because of this guy. He's an outstanding player. If not now, when? And if I'm a Nationals fan, at what point do I say, well, Juan Soto's gone next? Why am I falling in love with these guys for 5 or 6 years as rentals? I'm basically the Oakland A's.
So there's a lot to chew on there, right? So, one, I would walk back that you just made hundreds of millions of dollars on the World Series. I've tried to do some reporting on what it means to a franchise to financially to win a World Series. I don't have it nailed down. I have not heard anybody who thinks it's hundreds of millions of dollars. Now, there's some kind of ancillary stuff that you can't put a number on. Now you're a World Series champion. You've got some legitimacy that has to mean something financially that's beyond the sweatshirt sold and the tickets sold. But I don't think they're suddenly $200 million richer because they won Game 7 against the Astros. The other questions about, are you going to be able to keep these players that we have grown to love and we have become the backbone of a World Series champion? I agree with you. I think that the fan base, by and large, was fine with letting Bryce Harper go, but they also assumed on the back end of that it would mean that that's because they're getting Anthony Rendon to stay. And if that doesn't happen, you do get to a point where you're asking the exact questions you're asking, Grant. when are we going to tie somebody else, somebody up? Is it going to be Soto? Well, Soto's represented by Scott Boras. Extensions before free agency are rare with him. Obviously, Steven Strasburg did one. Are you going to do it with Trey Turner? Is Carter Kieboom, are you going to get aggressive with him and do a deal, you know, after his rookie year that extends him here? I'm just throwing spitballing names that, you know, Robles would fall into that category that you might be able to do that with. Don't forget they did extend Strasburg midstream. He would have been a free agent prior to. Obviously, it has the opt-out that is affecting this this offseason. But yes, you ask those questions as a fan. When are we going to keep our own guys?
Our buddy Barry Svaluga with us, another minute or two with him. You mentioned Strasburg. What about him? I think we're not really ready for the real possibility he might sign somewhere else. He's getting flirted with an awful lot by some of the Blue Bloods.
Well, I think if you expected that there was a world that Steven Strasburg was going to enter free agency and he wouldn't get flirted with, I think you weren't realizing what the opt-out meant. I think Strasburg's camp feels like the extension that they signed midstream, 7 years, $175 million, gave the Nationals a premier pitcher at a discount. And that's how these extensions work before you hit free agency, that the club gives up something and the player gives out up something. And now he's trying to get his real market value. The trick with him is, and what we're all speculating about is, we know he likes comfort. We know he's comfortable here. We know he's moved his family here. He lives here year round now. How valuable is that to him? And how much more are the Nats willing to add in years and dollars onto the 4 years at $100 million he had left on his deal? I think the Nats will always get the last word here. They will be able to respond to any offer that whoever, the Yankees, the Dodgers, the Angels, whoever might be after Strasburg. But you're right, Danny. It's no sure thing that he's back here. I still go into this entire process saying I expect Strasburg to be a Nat and I expect Rendon somewhere else. But it's guessing right now. It's December 3rd, and this could be a long process.
That's Barry Svaluga, The Washington Post, with Grant and Danny in our review of all the baseball chatter on the Fan this week. It will be interesting to see what happens. Say Rendon does go to the Rangers. Donaldson resigns in Atlanta. Perhaps Howie Kendrick is your third baseman in some sort of platoon with either Carter Kieboom or a Wilmer Defoe. We will see. Or they could go out and make a trade or make a move for somebody else. Mike Moustakas, infielder, is off the market into Cincinnati. Maybe surprised that he chose to sign as quickly as he did, but he took a good deal, and you can't blame him for that. Likes the pitching staff, and they do have some good young arms in Cincinnati. We saw some of that when the Nats were in Cincinnati this past season. When we come back, we'll go around the league, take a look at what's happening, who's signing who, what kind of money's been thrown around. We'll do that when we return. This is the Nats Hot Stove Show on Sports Radio 106.7 The Fan. Welcome back to the Nats Hot Stove Show on Sports Radio 106.7 The Fan. I'm Pete Medhurst. Hope you have a great Saturday, everybody. For the Washington Nationals, the situation is kind of sitting and waiting here. Who's going to put the money on the table for Rendon and Strasburg? And right now, who around baseball is moving and shaking without looking at these potential guys? I think the Braves got a little uncomfortable with some of the numbers around Madison Bumgarner. Cardinals apparently looking like a serious bidder in the Madison Bumgarner situation. His representatives have been contacted by the Reds, Padres, Yankees. St. Louis wants to get in and make a pitch. Now, you know, you're talking, if Zach Wheeler is getting 5 years, $118 million, there's no doubt someone's going to have to pony up for the 30-year-old left-hander in that same neighborhood. The question is, do the medicals check out? And if they do, then somebody's going to have to come to the table with some significant cash for Madison Bumgarner. And the ego of the player, the competitor of the player, is not going to let him take anything less. Because I think Madison Bumgarner believes he's every bit, still at his age, worth the kind of money that Zach Wheeler got on the open market. So you're likely looking at somewhere in the annual value of probably 25-ish, maybe, even if it's a shorter deal in terms of term, you probably got to get between upwards of 20, between 20 and 25 easily for Madison Bumgarner coming up here in this offseason. And the question is, I think he could be a guy that ends up going a little later rather than sooner, depending on whether a team just comes out and blows him away with an offer that we're not necessarily expecting right now. But I think the Cardinals jumping in are an interesting club that's already a solid rotation. You add that veteran in there, boy, they become another formidable foe right now in that NL Central Division. Meanwhile, in addition to that news, Alex Avila, backup catcher, heads to the Minnesota Twins, a one-year, $4.25 million contract. He'll be 33 in January. Probably not the kind of guy that will be a catcher every day in the league, doesn't stay healthy enough. And Mitch Garver really had a terrific season last year, but the veteran Avila becomes a terrific backup in a situation on a club that won the division last year. Had a trade yesterday as Tommy Pham heads from Tampa to San Diego as he's now being moved again. He, of course, at one point with the Cardinals, but Pham on the move as he ends up in San Diego. Hunter Renfroe and shortstop Xavier Edwards going to Tampa in the deal. And Renfroe's an interesting prospect and a guy that hit 33 home runs last year for the Padres. Tampa will have him under team control for two more years. So that's a good number there. Edwards, pretty solid prospect for the Padres at Class A. Hit 322 with 34 stolen bases between both levels of A-ball last year. So they get a guy for now in Tampa and a guy for the future in that deal for Tommy Pham and pitcher slash infield prospect Jake Cronenworth, who has done both so far in the minor leagues. I like Renfroe. I think it's a solid acquisition by Tampa. Got to score runs to beat the Yankees and to beat the Red Sox, and bringing Renfroe in is a good deal there. According to the Athletics' Dan Hayes, Michael Pineda going to stay with the Twins, two-year, $20 million contract, suspended for the first 5 weeks of next season, though, so he won't get that full $20 million, which, you know, saves the Twins a little bit of cash there. But Minnesota, I think, strikes a good deal if Pineda can stay healthy before his suspension. He was 11-5 last season with an ERA of 4. And I think, you know, Pineda's a guy that would have been fantastic to have on the bottom side of some rotations, especially for good clubs. I mean, you know, wouldn't have been out of the question. A team like the Phillies might have looked in that direction if possible. But give the Twins the preemptive strike as they'll keep him in the fold there. Meanwhile, a couple of Japanese guys taking interest, most notably Yoshitomo Setsugo. He told the Japan Times last month that he would love to sign in Major League Baseball. He's 28 years old. He had 29 home runs, 131 games last year with the Yokohama Bay Stars. And, you know, 38 home runs is, you know, pretty solid number in 2018 as well. His window, though, closes in less than 2 weeks from now. So if anybody's going to get involved with him, they're going to have to do it here rather quickly. A couple of other news and notes here. Jake Marisnyk of the Astros heads to the Mets as that's finally been announced. He had a pretty weak season last year and overall in 7 seasons at the major league level. Great defender, though. Guy that you're going to certainly see in late outfield situations. Fourth outfielder for the Mets coming up in 2020. He's 28 years old, has one more year of arbitration eligibility. Probably ends up somewhere around $2.5 or $3 million this coming season. Kennedy Corona and Blake Taylor go back to the Astros in return. Brewers acquiring catcher Omar Navarez from the Mariners for Adam Hill in a 2020 competitive balance round B selection. But, you know, look, I mean, that's going to be a downgrade from Yasmani Grandal. He should play a lot next year, 22 home runs for Seattle. But you know, you go from Yasmani Grandal moving down. I mean, that's obviously a significant step in that direction. We'll see how Milwaukee, we'll see if even if Milwaukee is done so far in terms of bidding to improve that position there with Grandal moving on to the Chicago White Sox. That'll do it for this week's program. As always, we appreciate you joining us here, and we will keep you up to date throughout the off season here. And look, I mean, anytime news breaks, even here on the weekends, we are live and local more than anyone else in the area. So make sure you keep it tuned, locked in right here to your home for Nationals baseball all season long. And, of course, we're already in the planning stages for next season as well. As Charlie and Dave, boy, I tell you, talk about enjoying the off season. Go to Charlie Slose's Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. He has been enjoying himself. Certainly has the holiday sweaters with the Nationals to prove it as well. Can't wait to have those guys back again next season with the Nationals and Nationals baseball right here on your station for Major League Baseball in the nation's capital. Sports Radio 106.7 The Fan.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.